The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. In this programme, Dylan Carlson, frontman of Seattle drone metal band Earth, gives us a little bit of theology and confesses he'll never make an up-tempo record.
I love listening to stuff, too, that's fast, and then I always think, like, oh, what would that sound like slowed down? Like, I don't know if that's a mental defect or something.
Also this week... It's a hat trick for Domino Records as we review some new tracks from Anna Calvi, Austra, and Cass McCombs. Keep listening for all that. This is Music Weekly from The Guardian. Welcome, welcome.
Thanks for downloading us.
Hello too to Rosie Swash.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm very good. How are
Excellent.
You?
Excellent. I'm not bad. And Louis Patterson.
Hello there.
How are you, Louis?
Yes, I'm
You're
fine. In
the middle of moving house.
I am in the middle of moving house, yes. I've been up at 7 a.m. shifting boxes, and it's one of those things that reminds you one of the sort of the key benefits of MP3s over vinyl. You can shift sort of 1,000 of them without sort of getting a slip disc in the process.
I'm on a one-in-one-out policy with vinyl now because of
wow.
my wife. I had some specially built shelves put in the living room, and once they were in and filled, my wife just goes, no more. Sorry, that's it. That is all the space for records in this house. So if I buy a 12-inch single, I have to get rid of a 12-inch single. But on the plus side, I did buy an enormous number of dance 12-inches in the mid-90s when I was, let's not beat about the bush, on loads of drugs. So this thing, I just pull things out. I've never, you know, what the hell's this? Put it on, it's awful. You know,
do you put it on eBay?
Or yeah,
do you
Gold just get Dust, rid of it? I think, a lot of that stuff these days.
You know what? Not the stuff I bought. I've got to be honest with you. Some of it I expect is, but most of it, no, you can't shift for love nor money. I think it goes to landfill or something. Landfill dance music. Anyway, let's move on quickly. We'll be hearing Louis' interview with Earth's Dylan Carlson. Wow. A legendary figure of US alt-rock.
Absolutely, a notorious figure.
A notorious, and yeah, absolutely. I think it's a slightly unfortunate state of affairs for Dylan Carlson, insofar as he is, you know, a seriously acclaimed experimental musician who gets in The Wire and things like that, and people take him terribly seriously. However, if you do give the eminent rock star of your generation the gun with which he kills himself, that is going to overshadow. It's really unfortunate because I think, you know, that's the thing that everyone knows about Dylan Carlson.
People are going to remember that, I think, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, if you gave Kurt Cobain the gun with which he shot himself. But really interesting oeuvre, Earth.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, from their sort of earliest records, kind of back in the early 90s through to kind of the stuff that they're making now, then, I mean, it's weird, there's a continuity there, but there's also been an enormous sort of amount of change in what they do, I think.
And, excellent. Well, look, we'll find out more about them later on. I'm pleased about this. Let no one write in and say this podcast is insufficiently, you know, experimental or wide-ranging in its tastes. We had Chicago House last week. This week, Earth. Amazing. We're going to start this week for a little change with Singles Club. Three tracks by Strange Coincidence are all on Domino Records.
Are they?
Let the conspiracy theorists start writing in at this moment.
Maybe we should call it a Domino Records special.
Domino Records special. Yeah. Wake up, sheeple. The Guardian is in the employ of Lawrence Bell. Wake up, sheeple. The music industry bends to the mighty will of Lawrence Bell. Anyway, we never actually confer about what we pick, I think.
No.
Obviously, I mean, why we would do that, I don't
know.
We don't
like to talk to each other when we don't have to sit in the studio.
No, in that respect, we're like the Beatles in the last days of Apple Records. Anyway, let's kick off with my choice.
Can't stand still, but I feel you by my side.
That's Anna Calvi and Blackout, which is my choice for this week's Domino Paola Singles Club. The reason I chose this is there's two kinds of hotly tipped, isn't there? There's two kinds of hotly tipped at this time of year. And one is like, rah, 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 the vaccines are going to be huge. They're going to change your life forever. And then there's something like Anna Calvi, who's just picking up sort of attention from very kind of cool and well-respected people within the industry, like Brian Eno and Nick Cave and people like that. I put the album on the first time. I had it on in the background and it just kind of went in one ear and out the other. And then this track is coming out as a single. And I listened to it in isolation the other night and I thought it was really, really good. I think it's just a big sort of sweeping epic pop song with, you know, produced in an interesting way. I mean, you know, such things are relative. It's not produced like James Blake is or something like that, if that's your definition of what an interesting way. But in terms of kind of a mainstream, somebody doing something interesting with a kind of big old mainstream rock ballad that you can imagine getting played on Radio 2, I thought right on when I heard this. Louis?
I think she's pretty remarkable, actually. I mean, she's definitely kind of got the chops. I haven't seen her live yet, and I think a lot of people are saying that live is kind of the place to see her. But I did interview her sort of about 3 weeks ago, I think, and she's kind of, sort of tiny and doll-like and extremely shy, and sort of hard to kind of equate that in your head with the music that,
which is pretty, but certainly her vocals are kind of throughout the album are pretty balls out. I mean, she's influenced by Maria Callas and things like that, which is sort of remarkable. I think, is it remarkable?
Yeah, I suppose it is.
I was just thinking opera. I started thinking about that fella out of Wild Beasts, though.
She's very, very into domino sort of Nina Simone and things like that. I think that she talks about a lot on that is she definitely doesn't look very much like Nina Simone, so quite the opposite, in fact. So.
Yeah, I just thought, I just think she's somebody trying to do something interesting within a, it's not a totally insane kind of framework. It's not a completely, you know, wow, wildly experimental framework. But I just thought there was something, there's an edge to it. And you can tell that, I think it's interesting you say that she's got influences like Nina Simone and you know, Maria Callas opera and things like that. Because you can tell she's not listening to the same records as everybody else is listening to. I think that much is very clear from the album. Rosie?
I was talking to Rebecca Nicholson recently, who's exactly the same as you, interviewed her. I think she'd been to see her the night before and couldn't reconcile the presence that she had on stage, which she said was just so huge. Everything was done in such a grand way. And she was so quiet and diminutive in person. And Rebecca actually said to her, you know, you're very quiet. How does that work now? And she was kind of saying, she said she felt almost, you know, very like she didn't have a place in the music industry as a person. She felt very, when she first started putting music out, she felt very aware that it was a place full of extroverts, probably more on the industry side than the artist
side.
But she decided, no, you know, this is me and I'm going to continue to be quiet and shy and then let it rip on stage. And I like that.
I mean, I did wonder a little bit, sort of chatting to her. She does come across as very shy, but I wonder if there's a sort of a bit of a guardedness to it.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the one thing
I would say about her music is that I really appreciate the drama of her, what she does, and I think it's genuine. But there is a bit of a distance there. When I first listened to the album, and to a degree now, it leaves me a little cold. And that's why I would really like to see her live.
Interesting. I don't know if it matters if someone's putting on a persona if it leaves you cold. You know what I mean? I mean, a lot of people do think that with artists who are clearly wearing, you know, a guise. I mean,
people say it about Janelle Monáe.
Absolutely, people. You know, I mean, you know, people could say. I'm sure people said it at the time about David Bowie. You know,
and also actually PJ Harvey, who she's been kind of compared to quite a lot, I think. But I think PJ Harvey, sort of in all her interviews, talks a lot about, you know, how it's, how she puts on personas. The songs are written as an author might write a novel or something like that, rather than, you know, purging sort of inner demons or anything.
Nick Cave, I suppose, is another case in point. Yeah. There was obviously an era where Nick Cave was sort of writing about himself, but, you know, thankfully for Nick Cave and his personal well-being, that's no longer true. You know, and I've seen him in B&Q on the old Shoreham Road in Brighton.
Rock song that does not make.
No, he didn't look like he was dragging Mary's coal bones to the Hellmouth, let me tell you. You know, he was actually buying a packet of screws. But, you know, I think I wonder sometimes about that. If it, you know, Brian Eno is very, it's interesting because he's a fan of Anna Calvi. Mm. He's very much against the idea that you should put, that you should give of yourself in a pop song. You know, that's completely antithetical to his notion of what pop music is about. That sort of Van Morrison, you know what I mean?
Right.
We should move on. Anna Calvi's self-titled album is available now. That track's coming out as a single in March, I think. Next, let's hear Louis' track. That's Beat and the Pulse by Austra. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Louis, it's your choice.
Austra.
Tell us about, I know this track, but I know nothing about the people who made it.
It's the new band by a girl called Katie Stelmanis, who has a little bit of history, actually. She is a Toronto musician. She's recorded a few sort of solo albums for a Toronto label called Blocks, 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 which has... before has put out records by sort of Owen Pallett and Fucked Up and people like
that. So she's part of that kind of... Owen Pallett and Fucked Up. So it's covering a fairly wide musical base there.
This is Toronto, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. So she's part of that kind of groovy Toronto sort of scene.
Yeah, she's kind of an ex-Riot girl as well, I think, but she's kind of sort of classically trained. She's trained in opera and things like that. But she put out a single on kind of Vice, I think, sort of last year or 2 years ago. But
let's not hold that against her.
she has just kind of formed a new band, and this is their debut single on Domino. So,
what do you like about it? I mean, it seems to me there is actually... not quite a lot of this stuff around, but there is this kind of weird reverb-heavy female vocal, slightly electronic-y thing going on, which I really like, I have to admit. You could tie it in with lots of different things. As we said last week, it's almost like Trish Keenan from Broadcast dies, and her kind of spirit seems to have just, you know what I mean? She dies at exactly the point where her spirit seems to be imbuing records a little bit, other people's records a little bit. What do you like about this track?
Well, I mean, I think she's got a remarkable voice, for one, a really, really strong voice. I saw her live at sort of the Old Blue Last a couple of weeks ago, I think, and it's not always a great place to see bands, really. It's a bit sort of sweaty and kind of pokey, and everyone's talking. But, I mean, they managed to... it reminded me a little bit of, I think, sort of Zola Jesus or something like that, but with kind of higher production values, and sort of everyone in the room was pretty rapt by it, I think. It was.
Is this sort of indicative of the rest of the material? Because this seems to me to be a bit more oomphy than Zola Jesus. You know, a bit more kind of, you could dance to it.
This is, the single's a little bit of a wild card, actually, because it's kind of got slightly sort of, I guess, kind of almost EBM-ish beats behind it. It's kind of got a little bit of a Nine Inch Nails-y kind of feel to that sort of electronics, I suppose. Mm. But a lot of the rest of the stuff kind of not quite so dancey, really. This is a kind of slightly different to the rest
goth?
Of the stuff.
I mean, is this goth music? I mean, you know.
Witch House.
Huh? It's not Witch House, though, is it? Is this Witch House?
I mean, isn't that what goth meets dance music is, no?
I don't know, the Witch House thing seems to... oh, I don't know, it's a silly term, isn't it?
Yeah, they're all silly.
what's it, drag? That's the other term for it.
Yeah, but
No,
rape gaze if you're in Salem.
Oh, dear me.
Don't call it that.
I did say to sort of... I was out with a kind of a veteran of the... 80s music press the other day, and mentioned to him that goth might be back, and the look that passed over his face was sort of a look of horror, appropriately.
I mean, it is interesting. I'm sort of in the process of writing a piece about the return of goth, and for it I spoke to the guy out of Salem, one of the guys out of Salem, not the rent boy, the other one, the former rent boy, the other guy, who was exactly as you'd expect the guy from Salem to be, and he was sort of going, oh man, you know, I don't really know what goth music is, and I don't know why anyone would think we're a goth band,
and
it's because you're called Salem, and you've got a picture of a burning cross on the front of your record sleeve, that's why people, generally speaking, would think you're a goth band, anyway. So is that what it's like? You think there's a bit of a gothic tinge to...
There's a gothic feel to it, I think, yeah. I mean, goths have never liked being called goths, really, have they? It's kind of something that people have always tried to kind of squirm out of. But I mean, I think there's a lot of music coming out this year that kind of bears an influence of some of that stuff. And, you know, whether it's goth or not is for up to
Ebsen and the Witch, and
yes,
you know,
yes.
Is it, which is another example of our O Children, who are another kind of, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So it's interesting that the goth is back. I wonder why. I wonder if it has something to do with the dark mood of the times. Rosie, were you ever a goth?
No, I was never a goth too, but can't be into UKG and be a goth at the same time.
It would
time.
Be amazing if you had been. It would
what
be amazing if you'd been down twice as nice in a sort of Kensington Market crushed velvet skirt. doing that. I'm now doing the sort of dance that goth girls used to do in the discos in the 80s. Anyway, so you weren't a goth. Do you like this?
I did a really small piece for the Observer Review last week, I'm sure you all read it, about a group called Nikki and the Dove, which I think has a similar sound to Austria. It feels like the last few years there's been, apart from what we were talking about earlier with the Zoda Jesus and the Dragon, whatever you want to call it, on one side, you've also got, there's the Florence and the Machine, Bat for Lashes, sense of the spectral. You know, it's definitely a fashion, even if, you know, you don't
necessarily... different kinds, though, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. And then you get something like Fever Ray, who makes this very glacial, very spooky, you know, techno. And what you always hope for is that people have got their eye... You know, if there's a similarity shared for a sense of the otherworldly or something like that, you would want them to go more towards the Fever Ray camp than the Florence camp.
Of course.
So, of course, the charts are full of the Claire Maguires and people like that who are following in Florence's wake. But fortunately, you've also got a lot of interesting female-fronted groups like this one and like Nikki and the Dove, who are doing something a little bit different. I mean, I actually thought she was Swedish by her vocals in this.
Katie Stelmanis.
I'm a little disappointed. She's not, I mean, I've got nothing against Toronto.
She sounds Greek. Stelmanis sounds like a very Greek name.
It is. It does sound a very Greek name.
Does sound exceptionally Greek. She's one of my fellow countrymen. no, I like that as well. I'd be intrigued to see the rest of her, hear the rest of her material. That is out in a fortnight.
Yes.
February the 21st.
On what? On Domino.
On Domino Records, the greatest label in Britain. And there's an album to follow, I assume, yes?
Yeah, their album's out later this year, I think.
Fantastic. Final selection on Domino Records is Rosie's Choice. Coming up to 20 to 3 on Half FM. That's Rosie's Choice, Cass McCombs there, and that's called Country Line. I like that a lot. I am, as you know, a fan of smooth music, and that is, as my friend Robin would say, smooth as fuck. Tell me a little bit about Cass McCombs. Tell us a little bit about this song, Country Line.
Well, Cass McCombs...
County Line, sorry.
County Line. Cass McCombs has had a fair few albums and EPs out, and he's been around for a few years. His personal history is quite interesting. He's got this transitory lifestyle, or at least he did have. And so Dropping the Writ was all about basically living out of his car and driving up the west coast of America and, you know, cleaning toilets to pay his way on the road and stuff like that. And it had a very coastal sound to it, and it was very nice. And this is a small move away from that. It makes me think of those 70s Laurel Canyon singers.
I think that's a fair comparison. Yeah.
And I think, you know, that personally for me does it. So I like that stuff and I think he does it beautifully. And I think it's just a really good example of not overcooking a track, you know. It's just really, really subtle and nice. And I'd never really noticed how nice his voice was before this.
It's interesting. It reminded me a little bit of Lamb Chop, but like Lamb Chop fronted by someone who really can sing. And that's not to sort of run down the vocalist from Lamb Chop. That part of the appeal is obviously he can't really do the things that he's trying to do vocally. Louis?
Well, yeah, he has a very sort of a proficient soul voice, doesn't he? Almost too proficient, I thought. I mean, I don't know if I could really kind of get my teeth into it, maybe. But I thought it was nice, but I'm not sure I'd necessarily go back there.
I know what you mean. I mean, I really like this particular track. I think it's a really, really good song. I'm not sure how much of it I'd want to listen to. I'm not sure if I want to listen to like albums and albums of this kind of stuff. But is his early work is sort of rougher, would you say?
No, it's not rougher. It's much more indie folk. It's not, right. It's not smooth.
I'd rather listen to this than indie folk.
Yeah. That's really undersells it, doesn't it? Well, I tell you what, I've liked him for a long time. This is quite different. I said to Paul Sandell from Domino Records,
Britain's greatest record label.
You know, I really want to interview him. He's definitely one of these mysterious characters who doesn't get very near to journalists. And apparently he said he will do it if I write him a letter.
What?
Yeah, so I've got to write him a letter with questions in it and talking about why I like his music and stuff like that, and he will write one back.
Has to be done with a pen, doesn't
it? I know, I did say that. I was like, I'll do it, but I have to type it because no one's going to be able to read my handwriting.
Send it by carrier pigeon. And what, he'll send you a letter back and that'll be the interview?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Just lost yourself a little bit of space in the newspaper.
But it'll get a good response when I dot my I's with hearts and all
that. Yeah, do it in glitter pen, draw unicorns in the...
I am your biggest fan.
We look forward to seeing that, and that's going to be in what, The Observer? Is that the kind of thing they're publishing these days? I don't know, on a Sunday? That's Cass McCombs. That's Cass McCombs there. That's called County Line. The album that's from is out on April the 12th. You can leave your thoughts on our singles choices and comments on anything else on the programme at the Music Weekly blog, guardian.co.uk/Music Weekly. Okay, as mentioned earlier, our interview this week. Louis, you have spoken to Earth's Dylan Carlson.
I have.
From the programme recently. Now, for anybody who isn't fully up to speed with Earth, generally, with the history of Earth, give us a little potted resume of why Earth are important and why Dylan Carlson is an important figure.
I think, like I said earlier, he's been a bit of a kind of a notorious figure, really. I mean, Earth formed back in the early 90s in Seattle, I believe, and... Yeah, I think he was kind of a figure of ill repute on the scene a little bit. He was, a heroin addict for a very long time. And I think that the way that his records, the Earth records, were sort of originally received kind of was coloured quite a lot by that. But I think that basically it's very sort of experimental kind of heavy metal, employs a lot of sort of repetition and kind of drone elements.
Incredibly slow.
Extremely sort of sludgy, sort of glacial speed stuff, really. And I think a lot of people heard it at the time. I mean, you've got to remember this is kind of at the height of grunge, really, that a lot of these records were coming out. I think Earth 2 came out in sort of round about... kind of 1994, and you can imagine sort of A&R men coming to Seattle for the first time and then listening to what was effectively sort of two guitars feeding back for sort of 60 minutes or so and thinking, I don't think I'm going to sign this guy.
Even at that point, even when a major label even signed Tad, you know.
Yes.
somewhere an A&R man listened to God's Balls by Tad and thought, this will sell. Yeah, they didn't get sort of caught up in that major label post-grunge gold rush.
They did not, know. And after the death of Kurt Cobain, which, Dylan Carlson was a very close friend of Kurt, and there was some kind of slightly awkward stuff that went on, as you mentioned, with kind of the gun and stuff. I think that Dylan procured it for him. And, yeah, it all ended rather horribly, and I think that... he kind of sort of slipped off the face of the earth kind of round about 1998. He sold his guitar and still extremely sort of in the grip of heroin, I think, and just sort of disappeared. And kind of unexpectedly kind of came back about sort of 2003, 2004 after completing rehab with a new sound, a new Earth lineup and some excellent new records that didn't really sound like early Earth but had a similar kind of... a pace, more of a sort of a cinematic kind of Americana feel, I guess.
Okay, that sounds intriguing. He makes a brief and, has to be said, flatly terrifying appearance in Nick Brumfield's documentary Kurt and Courtney, where he opines that Kurt Cobain didn't have a heroin problem because he could afford it. And this is the implication being the only kind of heroin problem you have is when you can't afford heroin.
I did speak to Dylan about the appearance in the Brumfield film once in a previous interview, actually, and I think he felt he'd been rather stitched up by Brumfield in it. Yeah, I think he said he'd done sort of four interviews with Brumfield, and the only one he used was when Dylan was relapsing and back on the drugs again.
He looks in a very, very, very bad way in that film. Let's talk about the stuff they've been up to recently. They've had a new album out called Angels of Darkness, Demons of Light 1. Sounds like a sort of fairly bleak record. Is that the case?
No, not at all, really. I mean, I think that the last three records that they've put out, starting with an album called Hex. I can't remember the full title, which came out around about sort of 2004. Then, yeah, they've genuinely sounded sort of, you know, quite a dynamic band again. It's got it's quite a beautiful record. It's kind of got Americana feel to it, I think, quite sort of cinematic. And yeah, I think as he'll speak a little bit in the interview about his the influence of sort of British folk rock and things like that.
Okay. Well, look, let's hear him. Let's hear Dylan Carlson. Hear what he's got to say for himself. This is Dylan talking to Louis.
What was the ambition with the new album, Angels of Darkness, Demons of Light 1? I think I read it's sort of apparently inspired by some British folk rock, sort of bands like Pentangle, Fairport Convention.
If there's any kind of theme since I started doing Earth again, I mean, I don't have a master plan or anything, but it seems like each album is going back in influence, like, you know, originally like hard rock, and then hard rock from blues and country, and then now country music was basically transplanted folk music from your Fair Isle. My latest obsession has been like fairy stories or stories about the gentry, and so the music of those bands sort of, I guess, goes along with that. Especially, you know, some of the Fairport Convention stuff, like Tamlin and that kind of stuff.
So where did the inspiration of the fairy thing come from? Is it some sort of reading?
Yeah, just reading stuff, and certain things will pique my interest. I think, too, because there's this one Scottish myth about them, which is obviously post-Christian. Hell, when Lucifer fell, all the angels were leaving heaven so fast that heaven was threatened to be emptied. And so Gabriel told God about it, so God sealed heaven and hell, and like, so, you know, all the angels that had made it to hell became devils and demons, and then the ones in the middle had to find somewhere else to go and moved into the earth and the air and whatnot. So I kind of like the idea of how they're like this third thing, and the fact that their logic is not our logic. To me, it was a very dense record, and the new thing I like because it's more melodically oriented, where it's like the guitar and the cello are trading melodies as opposed to like all this chord supporting melody kind of thing and a lot of overdubs and stuff. Whereas this album we did, it was a very live recording. The material for a couple weeks before we went into the studio. We did a tour with Wolves in the Throne Room, and then the last track is completely created in the studio. We just played live in the studio, and there's, you know, we didn't do any overdubs on it. It was just how it happened. Recorded enough for two records, which originally we were talking about doing both, but then it might be next year. But the second one is it's more similar to the last song, where it's all spontaneous stuff done in the studio. I'd had a health scare, I guess. Taste of mortality right before we went into the studio, or during the studio, so it was very productive because, you know, this might be the last record here. I don't know, but
let's make two.
Yeah.
I was listening to the new record, and sort of about halfway through, I had a realization. I think that the cello player on it is Laurie Goldstein, who appeared on Nirvana Unplugged, didn't she, back in the day?
Which is weird because I didn't meet her back then. It was like I met her recently through Steve Moore, who played piano on Bees, and then things sort of clicked. So yeah, it was kind of weird that, I mean, it was weird that I never met her back then, because, you know, we sort of were aware of each other, but it never met. But I really like her cello playing, because a lot of people, when they bring cello in, it's sort of like this cod classical kind of add-on, but because she plays all kinds of different music on cello, like jazz and Arab music and stuff, and she's a really great improviser. And then with us, she does this like rock cello thing through an amp and stuff. That's cool.
Something that seems kind of a hallmark for Earth, if there is one, or sort of a consistent sort of element to it, is this kind of like slow, sort of lumbering tempo. It's kind of, it's not quite metal, but it's heavy.
Yeah, I think the new album is heavy, but it's not dense like the previous albums. It's more of a, it's weird, it's like kind of more riff oriented in a way with the cello, because it's like the guitar and cello are sort of doing complementary melodies or riffs, as opposed to like chord supporting melody type thing. So I think it's heavy, but it's definitely not dense. It's more fluid. I really like the sound. I'm very, very chuffed right now.
You've never had sort of an urge to write a faster song, though?
No, I don't. I mean, I love listening to stuff, too, that's fast, and then I always think, like, oh, what would that sound like slowed down? Like, you know, like country, you know, it's got that rip and lead, but like, oh, what if you slowed that down? Or like, you know, folk music. I don't know if that's a mental defect or something, but maybe someday I'll surprise everyone and do 2-minute punk rock songs, but I doubt it.
Well, he certainly sounds like quite a character.
Sounds a lot nicer than I expected, based solely on the interview
music.
From the interview from the Nick Broomfield. I thought he was going to be an Anton Newcombe type. Maybe he was in the bits we didn't hear, but...
No, he's sort of a nice old chap these days, I think. Genuinely, he did sort of struggle with addiction for a long time, and I think that I've spoke to other people that sort of knew him back in the day, and he was a difficult character, I think, but the drugs is very much behind him, I think, and he's quite relieved about it as well.
I do have a soft spot for this kind of droney. I would say the other band that they remind me of a little bit in the prog drone metal canon is Black Mountain, who I also think is sensational and really good live, but I wouldn't say that I can hear Fairport Convention in there. Maybe a bit of Pentangle, but I wouldn't. That's not what sprung to mind when I listened to the EP.
But it's good. That in a way is good, that those influences can go in. It doesn't just make a record that sounds like Pentangle or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Which is what when people tend to say, oh, well, I'm heavily influenced by so and so, you say, yeah, I know, because that's what your record sounds like, you know. So that aspect of it is good. How does it, he mentioned the predecessor, the album, the previous album to this, which is called The Bees Made Honey in the Lion's Skull. How does it measure up to that? Is it, he said it's a much more sort of improvised, spare sounding record.
Yeah, this mostly shows up in the closing track, which I think is also the title track. It clocks in, I think, around about sort of 20 minutes or something like that.
Whoa.
And it's, there's a lot of kind of improvisation on that. You can hear it's slightly different, less composed than kind of stuff that they've done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Bees had kind of a trombone player and things like that. like that. So wow. That basically sort of
I'd like to hear the trombone player playing over the top of that. That sounds amazing.
They kind of switched the kind of the other players in the ensemble quite a lot, I think, for each album. Wow. Currently, sort of the core of it is just Dylan and his wife who plays drums.
Oh, okay, so. Cool. Well, thank you very much for going to speak to him for us, Louis.
No problem.
The new album by Earth, Angels of Darkness, Demons of Light 1, is out on the 21st of February. Earth are touring the UK and Ireland in April. Just before we go, some comments from last week's blog, which mainly concentrated on Bill Brewster's tracks compilation. Lots of good recommendations of other stuff to listen to and albums to get if you liked what you heard last week. A lot of people complaining that the album that I was talking about, which is Classic House Master Cuts Volume 1, isn't available. Apparently, you can't get it really cheap on eBay, as I thought. Can
you get it at all on eBay?
Well, you can, but it's like selling at vastly overinflated prices. However, I'm not condoning anything. at all. Apart from Domino Records, which I endorse fully. No.
Are you selling your Classic House volume so you can make way for more Domino Records?
Using my wife's one in, one out policy.
Using the podcast to bump up the price.
In these straightened times, I'm just espying a small business opportunity if anybody would like an original vinyl pressing. No, I think you might find if you type Classic House Master Cuts Volume 1 into Google, something might happen.
I think Discogs is good for going and putting messages up and saying, has anyone got this? Mm. Usually it's really good.
Absolutely. Well, you can do that as well. Yeah. Alternatively, if anybody does want them.
Alexis_Petridis will get back to you. Yeah, absolutely. You can have it for...
I had no idea it was that valuable. You know, I sold it years ago. Had I known. Anyway, sorry, we're getting wildly off the point of this here. Thanks to Chunky iPod Mini. Not one to suspect the name his mother gave him, or her mother even gave him, and J.L. Ward I, who suggested that Are You Hot Enough by Virgo and Ten Snakes Coma Cat, great record, love Coma Cat by Ten Snake, are dance tracks in a major key. Okay, I didn't know that. Sly Mongoose said, good to have it confirmed that the early house DJs were deliberately setting out to bludgeon their audiences with house to the exclusion of everything else. That's certainly how it felt to me at the time. I was especially disappointed that go-go got edged out. Yeah, go-go is kind of the forgotten dance music of the 80s. I remember being a huge deal. Bands like Trouble Funk at the time in the music press. And who remembers Trouble Funk now? Drop the Bomb. Great tune, though. Go-Go maintained a depth and a sense that there was more going on than simply the beat, as well as being funky as anything, and those records still stand up today. Perhaps worth checking out at some point, some old Go-Go records. Even so, hearing some of those house tunes again, they do sound better than I remember. Nice. Okay, excellent. That's it. You can leave your Singles Club reviews and comments on anything else in this week's programme at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Follow us on Twitter to find out what's happening on the programme too. We're Music Weekly Pod, all one word, though you'll find the link on your iPod screen now. Well, look, that's all for now. My thanks is over to Rosie.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Louis, for coming in.
No pleasure problem, to see you. Pleasure.
I hope the rest of the move goes according to plan.
Oh, God, me too.
Yeah, put some Earth on while you're doing it. You know, jolly yourself along a bit.
If I can find my stereo in whichever box it's in, then...
Look, we will be back next Friday. I'm Alexis Petridis. The programme was produced by Scott Corley. Thanks very much for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.